This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Coronavirus cases are impacting life from coast to coast in the United States. AP's Ed Donahue.
All bars and restaurants in at least eight states are required to close at least part of the day. Santa Clara County in California has been the epicenter of cases of the coronavirus in the San Francisco Bay Area. Dr. Sarah Cody is the local health officer.
These new orders direct all individuals to shelter at their place of residence and maintain social distancing of at least 6 feet from any other person when outside their residence.
In Ohio, Governor Mike DeWine points out Tuesday is presidential primary election day.
It is clear that tomorrow's in-person voting does not conform and cannot conform with these CDC guidelines.
DeWine wants to push the Ohio primary back to June. I'm Ed Donahue.
45 young, healthy volunteers were scheduled Monday to begin taking an experimental coronavirus vaccine at a research facility in Seattle, Washington, one of the U.S. cities hardest hit by the virus so far. Vaccines being developed by the National Institutes of Health and private biotech company. Rebecca Searle is one of the first to receive the experimental COVID-19 vaccine.
I really, really hope that it works and it's able to be used publicly and become widely available for everyone. You know, there's obviously a certain amount of nerves associated with it, you know, as any experimental trial is going to be. You know, I hope it works. I hope there is no crazy side effects.
And Neil Browning says he's participating because of his kids.
You know, every parent wants their children to look up to them, and giving them something worthwhile, in my opinion, for them to look up to is important.
A public health official say it will take a year to 18 months to fully validate a potential vaccine. This is VOA News. Several African governments have closed borders, restricted flights, and implemented strict quarantines meant to curb the spread of the coronavirus. For VOA, Simon Marks reports on the COVID-19's economic impact there.
The United Nations says it now estimates Africa's GDP rate will fall from 3.2% to 1.8% this year. Vira Hasongwe is Secretary General of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa.
This is going to deal a very severe blow to growth, even though the numbers of cases on the continent are quite small. Just look at that. Africa does not seem to be directly affected. But then when you go to the economics, and I think that is where the big story is for Africa, we are being severely affected.
Over the weekend, Kenya shut its borders to foreigners, while Ghana banned entry to anyone who had visited a country with the coronavirus in the last 2 weeks. South Africa, which is already in a recession, has declared a national state of emergency and banned travel to and from China, Europe and the US. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
There's a message from U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to Iraq. More from VOA's Marissa Melton.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told Iraqi Prime Minister Abdel Abdul Mahdi on Monday that those responsible for a deadly attack on a military base last week must be held accountable. Two American service members and a British medic were killed when an Iraqi base camp came under rocket attack last Wednesday. At least 14 others were injured. U.S. retaliatory strikes late Thursday and early Friday hit five weapons depots of the Iranian-backed group Kataib Hezbollah in Iraq. The commander who oversees U.S. operations in the Middle East warned that the threat from Iran and its proxies remains high. Iraq's Joint Operations Command called the U.S. strikes a blatant attack in a tweet on Friday. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
With fears of coronavirus pandemic sweeping, the U.S. Democratic presidential candidates Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders staged virtual rallies Monday, a day ahead of presidential nominating primary elections in four states that Biden's expected to win handedly. They held a face-to-face debate on Sunday night in a television studio that was without an audience. During that debate, Biden promised to pick a woman as a vice presidential candidate. Sanders said he would, in all likelihood, pick a progressive woman. Hundreds of inmates have escaped from at least four prisons in the state of Sao Paulo after local officials canceled their temporary exits because of fears they could bring the new coronavirus back with them upon their return. Sao Paulo in Brazil, the state penitentiary administration secretariat said in a statement that 174 inmates had already been recaptured, but still 1,000 should be on a leash. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Download on the one.
BOA 1.
I would be complex. I would be cool. They'd say I played the field before I found someone to commit to. And that would be okay for me to do. Every conquest I had made would make me more of a boss to you. I'd be a fearless leader. I'd be an alpha type. When everyone believes ya, what's that like? In the work, they wouldn't shake their heads and question how much of this I deserve. What I was wearing, if I was rude, could I be separated from my good ideas and power moves? And they would toast to me, let the players play. I'd be just like Leo in Saint-Tropez. I'm so sick of running as fast as I can. Get there quicker if I was a man. And I'm so sick of them coming at me again. Cause if I was a man, then I'd be the man. I'd be a man. I'd be a man. What's it like to brag about making in dollars and getting and models? And it's all good if you're bad, and it's okay if you're mad. If I was out flashing my dollars, I'd be a not a bother. They paid me out to be bad, so it's okay that I'm mad. I'm so sick of running as fast as I can, wondering if I'd get there quick or if I was a man.
Taylor Swift. From the Lover album, it's The Man. Taylor's man is Joe Alwyn, and there have been rumors the two of them are engaged, but so far nobody's confirmed or denied that. This is VOA1, and Selena Gomez, from her album Rare, she's not hiding the fact this was inspired by her relationship with Justin Bieber, Lose You to Love Me.
You promised the world and I fell for it. I put you first and you adored it. Set fires to my forest and you let it burn. Sing off key in my chorus, 'cause it wasn't yours. I saw the signs and I ignored it. Rose-colored glasses are distorted. Set fire to my purpose and I let it burn. You got off in the hurting when it wasn't yours.
Resolve some technical issues. I'm Yeez Hoheeb. And coming up,
the rights group says 8 journalists have been killed since the administration led by President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo came to power 3 years ago. 5 journalists were killed by Al-Shabaab attacks.
That was Mohamed Yusuf reporting on Somali press freedom. Plus, we hear about an effort to save disappearing languages in Cameroon, and South Sudanese students are stranded in Ethiopia. Those stories and more next on this special VOA Africa program. In 2019, 2 journalists were killed in Somalia, a low number by Somali standards, but the Somali Journalist Syndicate reports that more than 50 journalists were arrested and 81 were attacked while doing their job. The group defends the rights of the journalists in Horn of African nations. The group also says Somali security agencies stopped journalists 15 times as they tried to access government offices and areas. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
The Amnesty International report entitled We Live in Perpetual Fear details harassment, intimidation and killings of journalists by militant group Al-Shabaab, police and various government officials. The threats on Somali journalists have created a climate of fear, says Deprois Mushena, the head of Amnesty International in East and Southern Africa.
This fear is experienced through a range of violations that are physical in nature, which include physical attacks, arbitrary arrests of journalists, killings by both the armed group Al-Shabaab and the government forces, in particular in the one case. And then the disturbing accompanying point and observation we make is that for all these violations, there is actually no concluded investigations that have been done in order for us to say impunity is now being addressed.
The rights group says eight journalists have been killed since the administration led by President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo came to power 3 years ago. Five journalists were killed by Al-Shabaab attacks, two by unknown gunmen, and one was murdered by a police officer. Abdullahi Hassan, an Amnesty International Somali researcher, told reporters in Nairobi that journalists were attacked for doing their work.
Most of the times when these physical attacks happened, they happened in a context where journalists were trying to cover what they call sensitive stories. These sensitive stories include reporting on Al-Shabaab attacks, reporting on corruption, reporting on human rights violations, and reporting on issues that are perceived to be critical of the government.
Another eight Somali journalists have fled the country for fear of their lives. 30-year-old Noor Ismail Sheikh is one of them. His troubles began when he interviewed some opposition groups critical of the Somali government. The reporting led to his arrest. I was detained for 12 days in Mogadishu. I was detained in the Criminal Investigation Police for a few days and later transferred to the central prison without charge. He says, I was later released. After the release, I started receiving threats from different groups. The threats to my life have forced me to flee the country and come to Kenya. Somalia's Ministry of Information said in a statement Thursday that it disagrees with the rights group's findings. The statement said the report is politically motivated and is aimed at tainting the image of the Somali government, which it said has taken measures to protect journalists and media houses. Somalia is preparing for local and presidential elections next year. The rights organization says the heated political climate may generate more violence against journalists. It is calling on the Somali government to create an environment for journalists and media organizations to operate to inform and help Somalis to make decisions about their next government. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Uganda's Ministry for Gender and Culture is facing a backlash after equating the cultural practice of labia stretching with female circumcision, known as female genital mutilation, because of the damage caused. The traditional stretching of the female genitals by Bantu-speaking tribes in Uganda, Rwanda, and Zambia is believed to have benefits, including greater sexual pleasure. But the pre-marriage practice is criticized for being forced on young girls. As Halima Atumani reports from Kampala, first, a warning to listeners, this story includes content of a sexual nature and descriptions that some may find disturbing.
Cynthia, who for privacy does not wish to use her real name, was 12 years old when a senior female teacher announced that girls at her school, more than 100, would undergo genital stretching. Under pressure from the girls' parents, the school arranged for older women to instruct the girls on how to stretch their labia and to use traditional herbs to make it permanent.
It was painful. It wasn't really something pleasant for me as a person. Because at that time, you were something like 11 years, you're not sexually active. So why are you doing this thing? Honestly, why are you doing this so-called pulling, whatever people call it? I didn't know why. But because we're many, some days they would say, get a partner. Yeah, get a partner, you do it to each other.
Labia stretching is a pre-marriage tradition in southeastern Africa among Bantu-speaking tribes who believe it gives greater sexual pleasure to both men and women. But Uganda's Minister for Culture and Gender, Peace Mutuzo, sparked controversy this month by calling labia stretching a type of female genital mutilation. She says while FGM, that involves cutting or circumcision, does much greater physical damage, labia stretching should not be forced on girls.
Children between 8 to 12 are being sensitized, initiated, and the practice takes effect from that time. These are basically babies who have taken to schools for empowerment, for purposes of full growth, to actualize their potential.
For the last 20 years, Hamida Namatavu has been showing girls and women how to stretch their labia. She defends the cultural practice, claiming, unlike FGM, labia stretching has no negative effects, only positive ones.
chokate po malo chikola nawe bobo genda kufumbiro bo ino mwagalwao.
She says once you do it and you have a marriage partner, that's the only thing that will show him that you are ready. But doctors dismiss the claims. Dr. Vincent Karhanga says just like FGM, labia stretching is more about pleasing men than women.
Much as it is claimed that pulling can ease birth pain or even make a woman warmer, there is no scientific evidence in this. But what is true is that pulling can actually make the men involved sexually with the women happier with their sexual act.
Nonetheless, labia stretching practitioners are demanding that Mutuzo apologize for undermining their tradition. But she dismisses their call, saying she will continue to speak for the voiceless and discourage the practice until girls reach the age of consent. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Cameroon is launching a program to save its endangered national languages. The Central African state has over 260 national languages, but only 40 are taught in schools. Cameroonians speak mostly French and English, which are foreign but official languages, and part of an entrenched separatist conflict that has cost about 3,000 lives since 2017. Moki Edward Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
At the multilingual and inclusive government primary school Yaoundé, 150 children between the ages of 5 and 11 years old learn how to count in Ewondo, a Cameroon national language spoken in the country's central and southern regions that comprise two of the Central African state's 10 administrative regions. The students are also taught the national anthem and patriotic songs in Cameroon national languages. Many parents are in the school to see how their children learn to speak in the Ewondo language. 31-year-old businessman Emmanuel Mbom says he is satisfied at the progress made by his 6-year-old son since he is unable to teach his children at home.
In my situation, my wife and I speak two different languages, native languages, so my children try to pick what they can pick.
Mbom says he is confused about which language to teach his children because his language is Sawa, spoken in the littoral and southwest regions of Cameroon, and his wife is from the northwestern town of Nkambe, where the Limbum language is spoken. Cameroon's Secretary of State in the Ministry of Basic Education, Asheri Kilo, says she is satisfied with the level of interest the children display at speaking their national language.
It is very impressive the way the children are taken into learning their languages. And I decided to check how many children are from other regions rather than Yaoundé. And I figured that there were children from all the 10 regions in Cameroon.
Cameroon has 260 national languages spoken by an estimated 25 million people in the 10 regions of the country. It is one of the countries the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, classifies as a distinctive cultural density on the linguistic map of the world. The Central African state, however, inherited two foreign languages from its French and English colonial masters as official languages, with 80% of the population speaking French and 20% English. Fabian Freeland, Director General of the non-governmental organization Summer Institute of Linguistics, that helps Cameroon in promoting the teaching and learning of its national languages, says the official languages have not been effective tools of communication.
French and English has its limits for impact on development in this country. When there was a cholera outbreak in the far north, it's only when the